Chapter 1. The place had been a gas station, but not the kind with a convenience mart. It was considerably older than that. In fact, most of the roof was gone, eroded away by the often merciless desert sun, heat and wind, leaving bleached cinder block walls as the station's skeletal remains. Lonely as it was, the old edifice wasn't truly alone, for a phone booth remained on the deserted property as well. Another totem to that well and gone age, standing sentinel-like beside the dusty two-lane road. There was absolutely no reason for that phone to be ringing. In fact, it was no longer even wired to the line that ran past the old station, strung along weathered utility poles that looked like they were about to topple too. Time Weathers just stared at the phone stall's centrepiece. One of those C-shaped black plastic relics of the mid-late 20th century that hung in a pair of recesses on a grit-coated aluminium box shielded on three sides by milky yellow plexiglass panels. The thing kept ringing. The old bell's clang chirp still remarkably sharp, and quite jarring in the age of the ringtone. Time eventually looked around, knowing better, but still oddly expecting to see that she was on the verge of inadvertently starring in a TV prank. But the thing was, with the pumps removed and the service station just a few walls and half walls, there weren't a lot of places for somebody to be secretly recording her reaction to the ringing telephone, at least not close up, and particularly not from a good angle, because to answer the phone, she'd virtually have to step right into the booth, and thus become mostly invisible to anyone filming from outside it. And how could they have known her car would break down the first time she went off a major highway, leaving her not just without cell service, but on foot in the relative wilderness of central Nevada? This was almost literally the middle of nowhere, she realised. And at that point, her rationality kicked in, and it hit her that staging a prank like this would have been all but impossible. Yet the trace of irrational doubt remained. Time dropped her arms at her sides and addressed the empty lot. "For the record," she said, loudly enough for her voice to echo back to her off the old garage, "I don't give anybody my permission to record or broadcast me as I go over and answer that dumb phone." She knew she'd be doing it. Time had a lot of strengths, but resisting curiosity wasn't one of them. The phone had rung at least 30 times by then, non-stop. The caller wasn't hanging up and trying again. Caller? What caller? She took her time getting to the phone stall, the majority of which was covered in desert dust and little cobweb patches with bits of leaves and desiccated bugs hanging from them. Fortunately, the phone itself was relatively unwebbed, and, as she stood there, paused with her fingers just shy of it, Time saw that someone had written a 7-digit telephone number by finger on one of the plexiglass panes so recently that the digits were nearly devoid of dirt and dust. The phone rang again. With a final quick scan of her bleak surroundings, Time heaved a sigh and picked up the old-school device. The segmented cord was short and made squeaky sounds as its rusted metal sleeve rubbed against itself. There was a hose-like tension in the wire that was restricting it to an even shorter effective length. Time tried to put the phone to the side of her head, but ended up having to bend awkwardly just to get it in position to hear it. "Hello?" she said. The response she got was not in English. Whatever it was, the male voice was firing it at her full speed from the sound of it. The sharp sounds and guttural noises involved suggested to her that it had been an Eastern European language, but she could only guess. "Do you do English?" she finally said. "English?" The man sounded a bit surprised. "Oh, yes, forgive me. May I ask where you are at the moment, please? Oh, and I suppose I should ask what year it is as well." The voice was measured, calm and respectful, as well as polite, but there was an urgency implied. Time found herself scanning her surroundings again, and once again quickly verified for her own peace of mind that if there wasn't a hidden camera in the phone enclosure itself, it was unlikely anyone could have been recording her or this bizarre conversation. so she turned her focus to the call again and allowed herself a response. "Did you really just ask me what year it is?" "Yes, I know that quite likely sounds absurd to you, but you'll understand momentarily," she told him. "Ah, then it worked." "I'll have to take your word for that, I guess," Time said. "Look, sir, I keep thinking this is some kind of stunt, a practical joke, and you're not helping." "A joke? Of course not. This is perhaps the soberest moment either of us is likely to experience. And you're right. I forget my manners. My name is Albert, and I left your world in the middle of the previous century." "And you are?"
"You left this world?" she said.
"Alien abduction or what?"
"No, my dear girl. I passed away."
Time waited, but no punchline seemed to be coming. That was it. She was talking to a guy who claimed to be dead on a phone in the middle of nowhere that wasn't hooked up to anything.
"The name's Time," she finally said.
"You're saying you're what? A ghost?"
"Time, did you say? How appropriate," Albert chuckled.
"Yes, my dear Time, I suppose I am. I'm talking to a ghost on a phone that's not connected to anything," Time said. She glanced up at the bright sky.
"This has got to be the weirdest mirage ever."
"I assure you, what you are experiencing is quite real, although I doubt I could even attempt to explain what I've done to achieve this contact. You see, I don't know how long this connection will last, and what I need to tell you is of the utmost urgency."
"I didn't know ghosts were so busy," Time said, still watching through the milky booth glass for this elaborate-seeming prank's punchline to pop out from behind the old garage, with camera in hand.
"And if you didn't even know what year it was, how can whatever you have to say be urgent?"
"I'll be brief and to the point. Are you physically capable, my dear? No handicaps that prevent you from getting around? Because what you will be required to do virtually demands you be able to handle it physically as well as mentally."
For a long moment she didn't reply, but in the end she decided to bite. Again.
"I'm not in the right shoes for it," she said at last. "But yeah, I can get around just fine."
"Good." She drew away from the phone momentarily, muttering under her breath to the effect that she couldn't believe she was dealing with this. She huffed out her exasperation and drew back up to that old school phone again.
"Are you with me, my dear?" Albert the ghost was saying.
"No," she said with deadpan sarcasm. "I'm alive."
"Yes, yes, very witty. But if you'll permit me a little wordplay of my own, I need to tell you this before we both run out of you."
"The fish is on the hook," she said. "Reel me in. Bestow unto me your quest, good Sir Knight."
"Good. Now, many years ago in my earthly studies, I developed what I believed at the time to be a rather comprehensive view of the universe. And, as it turns out, though there's much more to it, I seem to have figured some of it correctly. Well, or at least what they called in the ballpark in my era. For example, and a quite pertinent one it is, I theorised about the possibility of bridging one time and place with another. And lo and behold, after a great deal of effort, I seem to have finally achieved my goal."
"Albert, no way it could be."
"You're saying you're the Albert Einstein," Time said. "The guy who gave us atomic bombs?"
She got no response.
"You still there?"
"My child, you have no idea how I feel about that. But if you look at my career, my life, you'll see that it was not the focus of my works or my thinking. I remain a utopian. And to this, I must now task you to keep that admittedly still distant utopia in your mind and heart as a distinct possibility. You see, they're about to test something that will not work as they expect,
You have to convince them to stop it and abandon the test.
You're telling me you're Einstein's ghost. She withdrew from the little half-booth and glanced around again.
Oh, what I wouldn't give for a doofus with a camera right now.
I beg your pardon?
The caller had overheard her saying that to herself, though her mouth had moved a foot or so from the phone. Realising this, she went back to the call.
Nothing, Albert. I just keep thinking this is the weirdest, most obscure and elaborate prank, and I'm its victim. I'm going to end up on a video that gets a million hits I don't want.
I don't really know the word video as a noun, or understand why you would be struck millions of times. But I suppose I understand your obvious scepticism. And I would like to prove that none of this is a hoax. So please tell me where you are.
Nevada. Kind of the middle. A little to the west. I can't even remember the last town. She leaned back out of the partial booth and looked around before returning to speak into the mouthpiece again.
I'm at a phone outside a service station that looks like it's been out of business for decades. There's still part of a sign up. A couple of letters on the front of the building that the wind hasn't managed to tear off like the rest.
Looks like NYD. And then space and then apostrophe S. Seven letters, I think.
Snyder's?
Yeah, could have been, I guess.
I don't believe it, he said.
Of course, that really should have been a phrase reserved for Time's use only in this strange engagement. Yet the surprise in the supposed Dr. Albert Einstein's ghost voice sounded genuine.
That's where I was the day it came to me, he said. We'd paused on a long trip, and I used a phone by the roadside to call home. I was looking up at the nearly full moon in the afternoon sky, and that's exactly when it hit me that time travel might indeed be possible as communication, if not perhaps as matter. That telephone in your hand, I was holding that phone. Somehow, the forces behind your reality, as well as mine, responded to my concerted endeavours here by linking me with the origin point of the concept itself.
So you're a ghost who's somehow linked to his own future after he died, and now wants me to do something so something bad doesn't happen.
I suppose I am still my own consciousness, individual, and with your help perhaps I can atone for the wrong things that were done, and are still being done, with the concepts I presented.
You're Einstein, and you want me to go stop some presumably super-secret project from going down.
Correct.
Do you understand physics? Time said dryly. I'm nobody. I shouldn't be in on something like this. I just happened to be passing through when your magic ghost experiment or whatever worked. But that doesn't qualify me for your noble quest. You say some big experiment will soon take place that will, what, destroy the world? And you want me to stop it? You're asking a pebble to knock down a mountain.
If you don't do it, no one will, the voice said. I've opened this channel, but only of utter necessity, and I do so knowing that my actions may invoke consequences that I'm not even going to try to imagine. You see, I'm not the only one at the fringe of your reality, not the only ghost who seeks to influence the world from whence we came. When we pass, most simply opt to move on for one reason or another, but not all. Some remain here, bound to their terrestrial cares more strongly, and I suppose this attempted intervention on my part proves that I am rightfully here among them. There are others who may be able to perceive what I'm doing, and possibly even replicate the path I've opened for their own ends. And among these are a number whose intentions may lead to terrible consequences.
You've made a phone call through time and space or from another dimension or whatever, and bad ghosts may be able to figure out what you've done and do it too.
Essentially?
What can either of us do about that?
I task you with only the single quest, as you refer to it. Beyond that, I don't think there's anything you can do if the repercussions of my actions come to pass, as I suggest they might. and saving your world, dear time, is the sort of thing that, by needs, must take precedence over the consideration of possible repercussions.
Well, of course.
Now, as to what you'll need to do...
Look, Albert, it's been fun, Time said.
Really?
But I've got a broken-down car. I'm stuck in nowhere land in shoes that are currently devouring my feet like piranhas, and if I don't reach something resembling civilization in the next few hours, I'm going to be a prime candidate to star in one of those hitchhiker slasher things, so...
Listen to me, young lady, Albert said, cutting her off as abruptly as she had done it to him. Are you willing to be responsible for the deaths of everything on Earth?
Not getting a response right away beyond silence, he seized the opportunity.
I understand your dilemma, so I'll be brief. I just need you to do this one thing, as I've said, and after that, I can expect no more.
Well, technically, you can't even expect that much, but please go on.
He did, after a deliberately silent moment or so. The experiment will be conducted not all that far from where you are now, and it will happen soon. Days, likely, by your accounting. We had a name for the concept, which in and of itself is not much different than what I have somehow managed to do here, although it will be accomplished with physical devices. The name was Morning Glory, and even in the 1940s it was considered a very long-term project because of the mechanics involved. Decades, perhaps a century, were forecast, and that estimate seems to be more accurate than, well, many of the others they made.
And I'm supposed to find it and somehow stop it? Time said.
A huge super secret project, and all I have to do is find it and stop them from doing what they've probably already spent half the world and nearly a century setting up to do.
No problem.
Good!
I guess sarcasm worked differently in your day, huh? I mean, do I get superpowers or something? Because it sounds like I need them.
She didn't get a response.
Albert, she said.
Dr. E?
Professor?
The line was completely dead, the device as useless as it had been only a few minutes before she'd happened to come upon it.
No way,
Time said, backing away and staring at the phone she'd just hung up.
No way this isn't a TV prank.
She had a hard time prying herself away from there and going on, but a growing overcast threatened to dump rain on her before she could make her way onto a legit shelter, and a strong urge not to get drenched propelled her onward at last, with occasional glances back at that phone booth until it was too small to see anymore.